to the Bill for the Trades podcast. This is your host, Dan Dowdy, and today I got my co-host with me, Nathan Glass here, the owner of Lampasas Marketing. And Nathan, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So before we dive into today's topic, it's really going to be a three-part topic, and it's going to be all about leading by example. And today we're going to actually break out emotional intelligence. The next one we're going to talk about intellectual intelligence. And then really the third one we're going to talk about leading by example through adversity and what that looks like, and give y'all some good clean takeaways to this. But before we dive in, I just want to remind the audience that, you know, we're here to grow this podcast organically. We love our community. We love the comments that y'all share. We love that y'all are tuning in and learning and listening and giving us feedback. So if you like what you hear, please like and subscribe, and then share this with a friend, because that's the only way that we're going to grow this organically. All right. So when it comes to leading by example, the first question I was just asking myself in preparation is, why do we want to lead by example? So Nathan, I'm going to kind of pitch it over to you. And
yeah, I think leading by example is really it's the primary way we lead, whether we realize it or not, right? You can say things to your blue in the face. You can send emails. You can leave sticky notes. You can write things down. You can speak to things, in other words, all day long. But people see your behavior, and that weighs far more than what you say. And there needs to be an alignment between what you say and how you behave. So modeling it through your behaviors, through your actions, is far more powerful than your words. And I see this with my, I have 1.5-year-old boys, twins, and obviously they understand a lot of words, but they don't speak yet. And it's amazing to see how they model my behavior. They model their siblings' behavior. Right. So that's a great example, because there's no words, right? They don't understand words. All they're doing is watching their siblings and doing the same thing. So it just shows you the power of modeling behavior.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Nathan. Because this is really a tough subject, because, you know, we all model positive behavior and we all Absolutely. Model negative behavior. And it's,
yes.
sometimes we're not even aware of what we're modeling.
Yeah.
And sometimes we are very aware of it. And it's so much easier to fix the people around you mm-hmm. than it is to actually look in the mirror and say, am I the cause of this issue?
Yep.
And there's one thing I like to talk about in my coaching with my clients. It's called leading up. And if somebody comes to me and says, hey, Dan, I have this problem with this team member. Let's just say the problem is that they're consistently showing up 5 minutes late. My first question is who leads that department? And my next question is, does that leader also show up 5 minutes late at times? And if they say yes, sometimes they justify it with, well, that they're the leader. They can do what they want, right? They have their own schedule, their own salary. And I'm like, no, you don't understand because that's the expectation that's set. And if the expectation's set like that for the leader as well, and they're showing up 5 minutes late, all they're doing is giving permission to the person they're leading to show up 5 minutes late. And so the way to kind of resolve that would be that if I'm the leader and I'm going to give myself permission to show up 5 minutes late, say I got to take my kids to school, and 2 days a week I'm going to show up at 8:15 instead of 8 o'clock. All I'm going to do is just reset the expectations with my team that they're to be here at 8, right? But on these 2 days, I'm going to be here by 8:15. And as long as you show up by 8:15, you reset that expectation, and you're now showing up on time. So the lead by example is you're now showing up, you know, you're now on time versus being late like you were before.
Kind of the way I like to think about, you know, your children or your team members. They are mirrors, right? They are reflecting back your behaviors to you. So when you see behaviors you don't like, the first person you should check in with is yourself. Am I exhibiting that behavior? Which is hard to swallow. It's hard for your ego, for sure.
It is hard to swallow. So if you're listening and you're running an organization, and say you struggle with an area, maybe you struggle with time management, and you're all over the place, and your desk is a mess, and you're constantly not getting things done or not following through with promises, every layer of your organization is just going to get worse and worse and worse. The cool thing is that we have the power to fix ourselves. We can only do what we can control, and working on our time management is a great area to work on, to say, you know what, maybe there's something to this leading by example. Maybe I can tighten up a few things and see how it affects my organization, because at the end of the day, leadership is influence.
Like, let's say you're leading the organization, so you're like 100% at organization. Okay, the next level down the organization, they're going to probably be about 70% as organized as you. The next level down is going to be maybe 50% as organized as you. Next level down, 20% as organized as you. So kind of to Dan's point, there's sort of this dilution as you go down, whether that's a, you know, a good habit that you have or a bad habit, mm-hmm. like it's going to kind of get diluted as it goes down. So in other words, whatever area you're working on or you want to see improvement on, you need to take it to the extreme, if you will, or get really good at it. And it's going to slowly filter its way down, but not, you know, it gets diluted at each level.
That's true. Because people are watching.
Yeah.
They're always watching.
Always watching.
All right, so let's dive in. So today we're going to talk about five different areas in emotional intelligence. But number one is going to be self-awareness. Number two, empathy and active listening. Number three, conflict resolution and relationship building. Number four, emotional regulation. And number five, effective communication. All right, so let's dive into self-awareness. The definition here says, exhibit self-awareness by recognizing and managing your emotions effectively. Demonstrate the importance of understanding your strengths, weaknesses, and emotional triggers.
Yeah, self-awareness is big, right? Really the place you have to start, right? Like it powers all the other four things. You can't really do the other four things well unless you first understand yourself and what's going on within you, right? One way I like to think of this is, you know, we're talking about emotions, right? So we're talking about like the feelings and things within your body that you are experiencing. Well, you're experiencing those and no one else around you is, right? Mm-hmm. So in other words, someone else might be experiencing some emotions and you're experiencing some emotions, but whose emotions should you be most aware of, right? The ones in your body, right? Because
yeah.
You're feeling them.
Yeah.
So in other words, if you can't even tune into the feelings in your body, there's probably very little chance that you're going to be able to tune into the emotions in someone else's body, because you're obviously not in their body. You're just, you know, experiencing it from a distance. So like the first opportunity to become aware and to understand the emotions and how to manage them and all these other things we're talking about starts with, what am I feeling? What am I going through and how do I manage that? And then that can, you know, kind of once you start to understand that, then you can start to increase your empathy and understanding of other people. But it begins with basically empathizing with yourself, tuning into yourself.
There was a time in my career where I was surrounded by my leadership team and I decided to get vulnerable with them. And I was like, you know, I would love for y'all, there's about 10 people in the room, I would love for y'all to just share one blind spot that I have that I don't know I have it, just share it with me. And that's the last time I ever asked that question. But on a serious note, that's a great question to ask. If you have that kind of trust built with your team, ask them, where's my blind spots? Mm-hmm. And they share a lot of things that I left feeling a little bit beat up, but I also left feeling empowered and self-aware.
Yeah.
And knowing that where my blind spots lie, and you know this in me, one of my blind spots is having an idea and wanting to implement it, thinking it's going to be a quick implementation, when in fact it's actually going to take us down the wrong path and take a lot longer and really take away from what we're currently working on as a team. And that's a current blind spot of most visionaries in mm-hmm. business. And so when I think of self-awareness, I think right away of blind spot. Mm. We all have them, and it's good to have somebody around you that you trust that can help you see those blind spots. And even when you see it, you still forget about it sometimes.
Yeah, that's right. And maybe you don't start by asking 10 team members you work with.
That's true.
Yeah. Maybe you start with a spouse or someone, you know, a little closer to you who could help, you know, shine some light on those blind spots. But you're right. If you lack self-awareness, asking the people around you to point out those things can really help. And also the people around you, you know, we talked about understanding your strengths, your weaknesses, emotional triggers. The people around you are also going to understand that. And on the strengths thing, you know, a good tool we use is Cloverleaf, mm-hmm. Which has lots of different kinds of tests that you can take to help you understand your strengths. And those can be a really powerful way to get insight. And it's amazing when you read those things, you're like, wow, they're writing about me exactly. This describes me perfectly. It's really wild how that works. But that's another great tool to increase awareness as well.
And that's also a tool that we have in our free tool area, right?
Yep. Yep.
So you have to go to Bill for the Trades /free. Mm-hmm. And then you can go there and take the Enneagram.
Yep.
So if you're listening to this and you want to become more self-aware, that's a free tool that we offer at BillForTheTrades.com. Go check it out and take it. And that definitely helps you learn a lot more about yourself. This is something that we talk about in our leadership trainings, and we call it Know Yourself to Grow Yourself.
Yes.
And it's one of the first training topics that we hit on because it's more important than anything else that you do.
Yeah.
It really is. If you don't know who you are, you don't know your strengths, and they're calling it weaknesses, but I'm going to call it blind spots, your strengths and your blind spots.
Yeah.
Then you're really missing out because, you know, emotional triggers are definitely really important, but I think strengths and weaknesses are really more important because we all have them. And if you think you don't have them, then you are already delusional. You already don't know yourself, so you can't grow yourself. And so yes, what I mean is yes. Like, you know, when we talk through leadership and management, right? Some people are stronger at leading and relationship building, and some people are stronger at managing and holding people accountable. That's a good example of strengths and weaknesses. And if you know what you lean towards more naturally, you can kind of lean into the other and bring in tools to help you either slow down and build more relationships or speed up and work with more urgency or have a tool that you can help take the emotion out of holding somebody accountable, all those different things. And so, step one is just self-awareness. Let's talk about emotional triggers.
That could be a lot of things, right? That could be a situation, meaning like a physical location might be an emotional trigger. A certain time of day could be a trigger. A certain, you know, type of food, a person.
That's true.
It really could be a lot of things that usually it's tied to your past experience with someone or experience, you know, with a customer in a certain situation. The idea would be, you know, something is causing an emotional reaction, right? So usually we notice the emotional reaction before we notice the trigger. So you can kind of work backwards, right? If you notice like, man, every time, you know, we have, you know, this weekly meeting or something, I come away really frustrated after that meeting. So what you're first going to notice is the frustration, the emotion, right? So the self-awareness, you're noticing, man, this is a really frustrating meeting for me. And then from that moment, you should start diving into, well, why? Why is it frustrating? What is the actual trigger? Because sometimes it's obvious, but a lot of times it's not. And actually understanding the trigger is the harder part. Like identifying the emotion is kind of the easy part. The harder part is what's the actual trigger? Because sometimes we think it's the meeting. But maybe it's the person leading the meeting or the way that, you know, feedback is being presented to you, right? So it may not be what you may think it's the meeting, but it's not actually the meeting. It's just the way that feedback is being delivered to you in that meeting by a certain person, right? So you have to get more specific and kind of keep diving in. What's the trigger? What's the trigger? What's the trigger? Till you can really identify it. And now you know what the problem is, so now you can figure out the solution.
Different scenarios in my life or different situations where it could be a location, a place I go back to, and it actually, you know, even if it doesn't feel like it's affecting you at that moment, there's days after or time after that you're different, right?
Yeah.
And it's good to be self-aware of that, because as you learn through that, you know going into the situation that it's probably going to affect you like that, and it'll allow you to...
That's right.
Either reset your expectations or just kind of overcome it quicker than you would if you were just blind to it. And you're wondering, why am I doing this, right?
Yeah.
Why is this affecting me the way it's affecting me? And so, it could be anything from a word to a location to a person to, like you said, food to all the above. And I also think that even just your sense of smell.
Absolutely.
Takes you back.
Smell
to
is a strong trigger.
Situations.
Yeah. But I think when creating that awareness of the trigger also like helps you plan for it, to your point. Like maybe it doesn't even evoke an immediate reaction or whatever, but you can plan ahead next time knowing like, okay, like maybe it's Thanksgiving, right? It's a family gathering. So now you know next Thanksgiving, okay, I'm gonna go into this situation. Here's what happened last time. Here's how I felt. What can I do to manage that better? Mm-hmm. Maybe I realize like I need to go in and like take a break, step out, you know, walk around the block a couple times, or I need to go talk to my wife or whatever. Like you can kind of come up with a game plan to help manage yourself through that situation, because like, you know, in some cases you can't change the trigger. You can't change the circumstances. So you either, you need, if it's a serious trigger, you need emotional healing from it. You need to forgive that person. There's probably some forgiveness in there that needs to happen. But let's say you have worked through all that and you're still having an emotional response. Then it's a matter of, okay, how do I manage myself through that situation where I can't control, you know, what's going to happen by other people? I can really only control myself. So how do I manage myself through that in the best way?
And one more point before we go into the empathy and active listening. when we're, you know, leading our business and we have a team member who's not buying into something, it could be that I'm standing in the front of a room training a group of technicians and I got one technician who just won't buy into this, whatever I'm trying to deliver to this person. Mm-hmm. A lot of that could be an emotional trigger.
Yep.
You know, it could be the way that it could be a tone of voice, what you
Absolutely.
Said, right? The location that we're in. It could be any of those things that this person's leaning back on. Well, my last boss did this and this happened, mm-hmm. right? It was a pain point. So I'm not going to buy into that because I don't want to experience that pain again
right.
that I experienced last time. Or my last boss promised me this and didn't follow through with it. So why should I go into that pain again? And so that's next level thinking, but you got to realize sometimes it's not just them not wanting to do what it is you want them to do. Sometimes it's a past emotional trigger, right?
Yep.
That's leading them to not buy into whatever it is you want them to buy into.
That's good.
All right. So let's jump into empathy and active listening. So it says, show empathy by genuinely understanding others' feelings and perspectives. Practice active listening to create space where team members feel heard and valued. I guess the first thing we gotta talk about is empathy and what that is.
Yeah, to me, I see kind of what I was mentioning earlier, right? Self-awareness is really empathy for your own emotions. So we typically say the word empathy, we're thinking about other people's, but or to flip it the other way, it's awareness of other people's emotions. Mm-hmm. It's really what empathy is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not, it's different than sympathy, right? Because sympathy is feeling sorry for somebody else.
Right.
Empathy is more putting yourself in their shoes. Now, when you do that, you don't want to say, well, I totally understand where you're coming from, unless you totally understand where they're coming from, because we all have different upbringings and perspectives, and our lives are different. But I think it's more like how I communicate empathy, it's more like if you and I are sitting on opposite sides of the table, I say something or I just empathize with that person to the point where they feel like I'm on their team. Mm-hmm. And so a good example of that, if somebody told me something bad is happening and I just blow it off and don't say anything, well, I'm not showing any emotion towards it, right? I'm actually not listening at all, and that's the worst thing to do. If I just say, hey, I feel sorry for you, then I'm just showing sympathy. But if I say, man, that's really tough, you know, that's gotta be super tough, man.
Yep.
I just want you to know I'm here for you.
Yep.
You know, that's different. Now all of a sudden it's like I slowed down, I paused for a minute, and though I didn't say I understand the way that you feel, because I may not, I at least got on your side of the table and said, I'm here for you, let me know how I can help. Now we're on the same team, now we can move forward. And when it comes to leading by example, we have to have that emotional intelligence to know what is the difference. And it's not something that's readily taught.
Yep.
You know, a lot of people listening maybe don't understand that.
Yep.
And so if I'm a customer service rep, and the customer calls me and says, I have this problem, I need you to come fix my house. And I say, cool, what's your address? I totally missed the opportunity to connect with that person.
Yes.
We're still on opposite teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it's still me versus them.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, I could have said, man, that's really tough. I'm so sorry you're going through that. What I need to do is go ahead and get your address and we can get out there today. You know what I mean?
It's
it was
huge.
Literally just, I didn't do much different besides now we're on the same team.
Right.
Or, hey, I'm so sorry you're going through that. I just want you to know that you called the right company. We're experts in that. We can take care of that for you. So I showed empathy and I built confidence in letting them know, just reassuring their decision to choose us as their company.
That's,
you know.
Yeah, no, that's huge, because that's really next level, right? Like, most business owners, you understand how to fix the problems, right? Like, mm-hmm. the technical work that needs to be done. But, like a lot of things, the next level of your business is understanding things like this, where you're empathizing with your customers and you're creating a customer for life by doing things like that. And it's, to your point, it doesn't necessarily take a lot of extra time. It doesn't cost you extra money.
Yeah.
It's literally just 10 seconds of, man, that sounds awful. I'm sorry to hear that your, you know, pipe burst and you're flooding your house. We'll get out there as soon as we can. Just that 10 seconds of empathy helps them feel heard and understood. And that's huge for building relationships, either with your customers or with your team members. So it's really like, it's a missed opportunity if you're not tuning into those moments. And sometimes people may, you know, just peek their head in your office and, you know, say something real quick and you just kind of blow it off. And like those little moments though, if you're tuned into the emotion behind what they're saying, you can kind of sense like there's more to this. They need to be heard. You can generally feel that. like when someone has something like they need to get off their chest, and if you blow them off in that moment, man, that's such a huge, it's a missed opportunity to deepen your relationship. And when you deepen your relationship, kind of get more on the practical side, they're going to feel heard, understood. That's going to help every conversation you have after them, especially tough conversations, if you're giving them feedback on things, or talking about why we couldn't promote you, things like that. If you have a good relationship with them because you've been empathizing with them, those conversations are easier and better understood because they're going to start understanding you better. It's going to help with employer retention. It's going to help with customer retention. Like, there's a lot of huge benefits from just being, just increasing your empathy.
That's good, man. That's good. Yeah, I mean, and that leads directly into the next piece here is just active listening.
Yep.
So how do you active listen, right? Really, the best thing I tell people is just if you're going to engage in a conversation, it should be the only thing that you're focused on.
Yeah,
correct. So you shouldn't be reading text messages or sending emails or trying to multitask, right? You should be just completely focused, making eye contact, or if you're on the phone, you're just completely focusing on what the customer is saying. And then when you feel yourself start to slip into, well, I'm going to say this, you got to stop yourself and say, no, I need to actively listen.
Yeah.
And even in recording the podcast, you know, it's like you're saying something and sometimes my mind gets caught up in what I'm going to say next. Mm-hmm. And I forget to actively listen to what you're saying. And so it's just saying that I'm just being honest that it can happen in any setting, but it's being self-aware that knowing that's what's taking place. And if there's a thought that I need to capture, I can just write it on a piece of paper and then re-engage with somebody. Mm-hmm. But that's really next level stuff. And if somebody like comes to my office and says, hey, Dan, you got a minute, I have to choose, do I engage in active listening or do I continue doing what I'm doing and reset that expectation with that person?
Yeah.
And I, you know, the days of continuing to send the email where I say, yeah, go ahead, and they're talking to me and then they leave and I thought, I don't even know what they said. Like, right? You're not active listening. You're not building your leadership or trust. You're actually showing them that they're less important than whatever you have going on.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, that was a complete waste of time for everybody involved.
Yeah, and it's really, I mean, it's you're not showing that person respect. And for men, that's huge, especially. There's a great book called Love and Respect that talks about this topic. That's where I first really tuned into it. But I would put that in terms of respect, right? You're really not showing that person respect. And for men, both men and women, but especially men, that's a huge thing. You feel disrespected in that moment, which can lead to all kinds of problems and issues. One more tip on the active listening, besides I think what you said, which is basically paying attention to that person by stopping what you're doing. Mm-hmm. The other key for me that helped me was simply listening to what someone is saying. Like, if nothing else, just listen to what they're saying and repeat back to them. And kind of summarize what they're saying and repeat it back to them. And they will feel heard. So for me, you know, being, you know, having to learn how to socialize, like that was a huge thing for me. It's like, okay, I just need to listen, repeat back to them what they're saying. So it's sort of like 101 active listening. You can certainly go deeper, but if you're really struggling with this, you really don't know how to do that, just start with that. Just start with, okay, I'm gonna listen to what they're saying and I'm gonna repeat back to them what I think I heard them say. And that will make them feel heard.
That's good, man. That's good. And then the last thing before we go to step three here, create a space where team members feel heard and valued. If you're leading a team out there, have scheduled relationship time at least once a month minimum. I encourage twice a month with your team, one for relationship building and just a space to be heard, another one for just kind of scorecarding them on how they're doing with their team. But you got to have that space, otherwise people will take advantage of whatever they can get. And what I mean is you'll get a lot of got a minute meetings, mm-hmm. a lot of interruptions, because they know that there's no space for us to communicate. There's no space for us to be able to be heard and valued as a team member. So it's really important.
That's good.
Conflict resolution, relationship building, step three. So lead by handling conflicts with empathy and finding win-win solutions. Showcase how to build and maintain strong relationships based on trust and respect.
This is good. I think the often, especially as, you know, business owner, and you always feel like you're behind on getting things done right and solving problems. So you immediately want to jump to solving the problem. Mm-hmm. So to me, this is sort of saying the opposite. Like, first you want to understand the person and what they're feeling and their perspective and work with them to come up with a solution instead of railroading somebody because, like, you may already know what a good solution is, mm-hmm. but if you want to show good leadership, right, you're always trying to build up the other people in your company to be good leaders themselves, to make decisions themselves. Mm-hmm. So instead of railroading somebody with, okay, we'll just go do this, by stopping, empathizing with them, understanding first how they feel, then you can kind of guide the conversation with questions to get them to a good solution. And to me, you're developing them into a leader and them into someone, you're helping increase their self-awareness, you're helping increase their decision-making, and you're gonna end up with someone who's a stronger leader themselves.
You can always pay somebody to do a job, but it's, mm-hmm. it's not easy to pay somebody to really want to do their job and to go above and beyond.
Yep.
And I think that's kind of what you're leading to there. And there's gonna be, I mean, in life period, there's conflict. Like, absolutely. If you're doing anything in life to try to get better, to grow a company, to whatever, there's going to be conflict.
Yes.
And I really like that idea of finding that win-win, because if we go in thinking that we always have to win, then you're always going to have the just enough. I call it the just enough employee. But it could be anywhere in your life.
Yeah.
It could be your spouse. It could be your kids, right? It could be your friends. It could be your coworkers. But if you're always dominating that winning, mm-hmm. then people may just be around you just because they have to, and they do just enough to get by. They're not motivated to do more for you, right? Because yeah. you're so demanding and controlling. And so going into situations, realizing that though I may think I'm always right, there's got to be another perspective to this. Maybe there's a win-win solution that we yeah. can find. That's emotional intelligence.
Yep.
You know, if I'm on the farther end of it, I'm just not emotionally aware of what's going on. That could be a blind spot, right? I might be getting what I want, but eventually that, you know, the ability to grow that runs out.
Right.
You know, right. For motivation reasons, but also we only have so much that we can actually do as a human being.
Yeah.
There's only 24 hours of the day. There's only so much that we can control. And so going into conflict resolution, I encourage people to look for the win-win solutions. And even when you're running a trades business, I like to look at it like there's a win solution for the team member, there's a win solution for the owner, and I also think there's a win solution for the client. Mm-hmm. And it's going into that conflict knowing where does that lie, where can we all win. And it's when you get lopsided and the owner's winning but nobody else, or the team member's winning but nobody else, or maybe two is winning but the third one's not, is where I think you start to lose that balance. And so I really encourage people to approach those conflict situations like that, whether you're dealing with an angry customer, mm-hmm. or an angry team member, or an angry spouse, or whatever it is in your life. That's great emotional intelligence. And that does lead you right into building those strong relationships based on trust and respect.
I would reiterate that win-win does not mean, like, you come out of that conversation feeling like you were right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, being right is not winning, and that's not how we're defining winning.
Yeah.
Like, that never leads to anything good. Like, that was a huge shift for me in relationships in general, was realizing that being right has very little value. It makes me feel good for a few seconds after that, but in the long run, it led to me damaging a relationship because of the way I handled a conversation, because I needed to be right. And that's such a that's such a short-sighted view of relationships and really what's important, because often being right is not that important in any given situation. But the relationship with that person is the far more important thing, whether that's a customer or an employee.
Yeah, I mean, if the trust is not there, you really have nothing.
Yeah.
Period. Because there's times in leadership, as you know, where you got to make a decision that you know is not going to be a favorite decision, especially by, you know, some of your team members. But if they trust you, if your track record has proven that you have been able to find win-win solutions, or has proven that you have a track record of winning and truly caring about your team, then at times you're going to have to ask people to just trust you. Just trust me. I know it doesn't feel good now, but in the future, it's going to benefit everybody in this room. And whether you're playing sports, or you're running a business, or you're leading a family or a church or whatever it is, just know that there's going to be times in order to grow your team that you're going to have to make those unpopular decisions, because leadership's not about making everybody happy. I wish it was. It'd be a lot easier.
It would be.
But it's not. It's not. So that kind of takes us directly into step four. So emotional regulation. Display emotional composure and manage stress effectively. Whew, teach your team. I kind of just stopped there for a minute. Teach your team how to handle pressure in difficult situations without letting emotions take over. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to leading by example, I've seen and been around a lot of leaders who definitely lead the wrong example when it comes to showing how to handle pressure in difficult situations. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this is definitely a challenging one. I think we all struggle with this at times. I think first I would say on this is, it's not about trying to change your emotions, mm-hmm. right? Your emotional reactions necessarily. It's about managing them. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe if you're flying off the handle, you need to learn to control yourself, right? But, yeah. But I used to think that like people who are very composed, it's like they're not having the feelings, which is not true. People who can't have emotional composure are having the same feelings you're having. They're just better at handling them or managing them. So, you know, in other words, it's not about getting rid of emotions or ignoring them or pretending like they don't exist. Mm-hmm. It's about becoming aware of them so you can manage them properly.
That's true. Yeah, in the Enneagram, it talks about three different types of anger management. The ones who internalize it and repress it, the one who externalizes it, and the one who denies it that it even exists. There exactly. So there you go. You may be one of those. You are one of those three. One of those three.
Yeah.
But I was jokingly talking about the person who externalizes it. Mm-hmm. And I love those people because I think that is a great strength to have, mm-hmm. but you can't just always lean on that strength because you will run people off, or you will surround yourself with a lot of people that's a lot of yelling and cussing going on in your business because they're doing what they see, right? You're leading the example. And so I like the idea of managing. I actually see it like channeling that energy. So how are you channeling that anger and managing that stress effectively? And so a couple of different tips I want to give for our audience is when it comes to stressful situations, a lot of that has to do with a conclusion that we've drawn in our mind of negativity. It's the fear of the unknown. And I think as humans, whether it's your boss saying, hey, when you got a few minutes, can you come to my office? Or, you know, another situation where maybe your kid's driving for the first time and you start to draw this negative conclusion to what could happen, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Either way, you know, we could go down this path of I'm going to get fired today or, you know, something bad is going to happen over here, right? It's just natural. I don't know why we do that as humans, but it's knowing that that's where our minds can go sometimes and being able to kind of curve that out and say, you know, I'm not going to speak that or I'm not going to think that. You know, or hey, if my boss is calling my office, maybe I'm going to get a little bit of clarity of what's going on there so I can help to kind of manage that fear and manage that stress a little bit. And the next piece I like to share with people too when it comes to stress also is led by just things in our mind that aren't written down anywhere.
Yeah.
Because we're trying to remember to do everything. Mm-hmm. And so when you're like, oh, man, I need to call that customer. Oh, I need to tell that team member that. Oh, man, I need to, well, I don't even know what's for dinner tonight. You know, you can mm-hmm. see how my mind, if that's all up here, I'm very stressed. And then I'm dealing with whatever's in front of me as well. If you just stop for a few minutes and just kind of brain dump that down on a piece of paper.
Yep.
Or maybe on the notes of your phone, just talking to your phone or type it in and say, hey, I need to do these things. Just getting that down somewhere and knowing that you can go to it later just removes a lot of that stress from your mind.
No, that's good. That's good because you can only handle so many things in your mind at once. So the more you can get out on paper, in a computer, on your phone, whatnot. Yeah, that's a great tip. One of the things that I think about when it comes to managing emotions, regulating emotions is, you know, if it's something you struggle with, so a situation arises, let's say, and you get angry about it. So that's the emotional response you're having to the situation. To me, emotional regulation is a big part of it, is simply how long are you angry after that situation, right? Like if you're angry for 2 years after that situation, like that's a problem. That's gonna affect your life in a really big way. But if you can get that down to, you know, 6 months, to 1 month, to 1 week, to 1 day, to 1 hour, to 5 minutes, to 30 seconds, right? Like, to me, that's kind of how I think of the goal of emotional regulation for certain things. It depends on what it is. But for smaller things in life, it should be about, like, getting to the place where you can have the emotion, become aware of it, allow it to happen, because you can't stop it, right? Like, acknowledge it, don't internalize it, externalize, like, manage it, like, allow it to happen, but then quickly move away from it and move into, okay, well, now how do we solve this problem, right? Or if there's fear that's elicited from it, and fear is largely what do I not know, start asking questions to figure out what you need to know. So I guess the point is, like, I would see it as a measure of, like, how long do things, you know, set you off or cause anger or disrupt your day? And if it's, you know, an entire day is disrupted because something happened at 9 a.m., then work on trying to allow it to only affect you for three hours, and then 1 hour, and then 1 minute, you know? So to me, that's part of a kind of a somewhat measurable way of understanding how well you regulate your emotions is how long it kind of, you know, disrupts your day.
I like that, Nathan. Yeah, really, it points back to just emotional intelligence. I think about intelligence as, you know, I'm going to learn this and I'm going to apply it, and I'm going to go back and learn more and apply that and just kind of get better along the way. And that's really exactly what you're saying. And I kind of like that picture of, you know, shrinking that effectiveness down and being able to regulate. It's really, really good. So number five is effective communication. I laugh because, you know, it's every business I work with, communication is an issue. It just is, right? Yeah. I think just bring humans into a room and have them communicate. There's going to be a situation where it's an issue. Demonstrate clear and respectful communication. Showcase the value of open dialogue and encourage your team to communicate openly, especially during times of uncertain change. So demonstrate clear and respectful communication. As a leader, there are so many times where I say something to somebody and then they leave and they do the complete opposite, you know, and you're like, I just literally told that person. Yes. And I think what you got to realize is sometimes that's the person not doing what you're saying, right? But a lot of times it's a person not hearing what you're saying and not understanding. And so in order to overcome that problem is sometimes you got to just ask that person to repeat back what it is that you said to them. And so, and when you do it, you'll do that exercise, and you actually, it's kind of funny because they will tell you things, and you're like, no, I did not say that. I don't know how you got that.
Not at all.
I like to do that a lot of times at the end of my coaching sessions is, okay, so what did you take away from today? Mm-hmm. And you're just like hoping that like they took away what you wanted them to take away. And sometimes it's like not even close. You're like, wow. Oh man, I missed the mark.
Yeah.
You know, but until you get that feedback, you know, you really don't know how effective your communication is.
That's good. And I think as men, we tend to under communicate, right? So I would say for the men in the group, there's no such thing as over communication. It may feel like you're, you know, like I should be able to, you know, explain this in 5 words and they should be able to get it, but maybe they don't. So I think, try for, you know, a week, try the opposite, try to over explain everything and see how that goes. Just try it.
That's a dangerous slippery slope.
It is a dangerous slippery slope for some people. Yeah.
Depends on how much you talk. Emotional awareness, right?
Yes. Yeah.
But no, I do like that because we do, you know, like even in marriages, like you think you've communicated that.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just in your mind. Like, or you just had a thought and you never actually verbalize it to anybody. So.
Well, maybe the opposite might be helpful too. If you're someone who does talk too much, then you try the opposite. Try to talk less. And so. But spend that time thinking, because right, we're saying clear communication. So often clear communication, or the opposite, things are not clear when we don't think through what needs to be said. So I would say people who probably struggle with that the most is people who tend to talk first and think later. Well, try switching that around. I tend to be the opposite. I overthink and then I communicate too little. But I think there are people who do the exact opposite, right? They talk too much and then think too little afterwards.
Yeah, it's very true.
So wherever you are, do the opposite.
So how do we, we're talking about how we demonstrate a clear communication, but how do we do it respectfully in your mind?
So I think, well, it begins with what we said earlier with empathy and active listening, right? Which is showing respect to that other person and really trying to understand what they're saying. I think it's also, so respectful communication is, first of all, this is two ways. Like, communication is a two-way thing. So it's asking questions of the other person as well. Like, you're empathizing, you're understanding what they're feeling, you're giving them the space to say it, you're asking follow-up questions so you really understand what they're saying and their perspective. Mm-hmm. I think all of those things are what respectful communication looks like. And you're communicating in a setting that is without anger, without a lot of emotion, right? So if you are worked up about something, that's not the moment. You probably won't be able to have respectful communication in that moment. So maybe you need to take a beat, you know, pause. And then when you are calm, then bring that calmness into the conversation. But I don't think you can have respectful conversation in a heated moment, in other words.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I like the idea of kind of just taking that step back and whatever that trigger is, right, that yeah. sets you off. You
let it dissipate.
Let it dissipate, come back, but you do need to address it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that, yeah, respectful communication, when you hear that, I mean, we've all seen disrespectful communication, you know, so you know what that looks like.
Yeah.
And I think it's, yeah, I second everything that you said, and it really comes down to just, you know, in tone of voice and the words you say, I mean, all the above. I mean, it's, if you're communicating with people and putting them down and letting them know that they're less than,
yep.
then it's not very respectful, you
right.
know. If you're throwing the F-bomb every other word and telling them how worthless they are, not very respectful,
yep.
you know. So there's time and place, and I think when I think of respectful communication, one good point for everybody listening is always discipline people in private. And then when it's time to praise people, do it in public.
Yeah,
there's been times where I've called people out in public and, you know. And
it does not go well.
Yeah, you usually end up losing a team member.
Yeah.
And or it becomes a very disrespectful battle,
yes.
verbal battle. And you're setting that, you're leading that example in front of your entire team. And yeah, your ego jumps in there. You don't want to lose because everybody's
yeah.
watching. But what
yeah.
lengths are you going to go to win?
Yeah.
That's the question. So you
yeah.
put yourself in that situation by not being emotionally aware, by
yeah.
not having emotional intelligence. And as you do that, you know, you learn how to overcome that, and you start to be aware of where you're at and the situation and say, you know what, that's really upsetting to me, but at this moment, it's not the time and place to address it publicly. So let me address it privately as soon as we end this meeting
yeah.
and bring
good.
That person to my office. And the last piece here before we close on the podcast today, just encourage your team to communicate openly, especially during times of uncertain change. That is so true. And you got to remember, sometimes people won't speak up based on whatever their past experience is of speaking up. Like
yeah.
if you say to openly
yeah.
communicate and they
right.
said something that upsets you and you shut them down and
right.
tell them how worthless they are, well, the next time you want them to openly communicate,
they're not going to do that,
yeah. right? They're not
yeah.
going to put themselves back out there.
That's right.
And especially when you're changing things, going back to that fear of the unknown or going
right.
back to that conflict trigger that may be triggering a past emotion that was painful for somebody, you know, you got to realize there's all these things going on. So just because somebody doesn't want to buy into your change, right, your new thing that you want to implement that you learned at this conference that's so amazing, you know,
right.
it's not that they don't like you, right?
Right.
It
right.
may just be that you're not aware, you're not emotionally aware in your intelligence, and it may be it could be they don't trust you, it could be something you did, it could be something their past boss did, or
mm-hmm.
it could be something their parents did when they were kids. Like,
yep.
it goes so much deeper.
Right.
But just being emotionally intelligent with that and understanding and then seeking to understand why that person doesn't want to do it is really important.
No, that's good. And like change too, right? A lot of people don't like change. So if you drop some new ideas or we're going to do this thing this way now, a new process, a new procedure, a lot of people are going to be resistant to that. It's almost like a defense mechanism, right? It doesn't mean they won't come around or they won't actually like it, but a lot of people respond initially with just, what is this, you know?
Yeah.
And the other thing I was going to say on the open dialogue is, right, we're talking about leading by example. So if you don't demonstrate open dialogue by being open yourself, you can't expect anyone around you to do it. So you have to lead by example there as well.
All right. So today we covered emotional intelligence and leading by example. And if you've listened this long, you obviously enjoyed this podcast. So we just ask you that to drop us a 5-star review and share this with a friend, because our goal is to grow the trades community, grow, help people grow in their leadership, and really bring together like-minded men and women who are out there doing things with integrity and putting their best foot forward every day. And, you know, I'll just be honest with our audience. I mean, I'm out here recording this podcast, teaching these things, and I could underline areas of these five areas: the self-awareness, empathy and active listening, conflict resolution, relationship building, emotional regulation, and effective communication. There's areas that I still need a lot of work in.
Absolutely.
And so it was, you know, I hope y'all enjoyed this. It actually helped me as well. Mm-hmm. Hope it helped you as well, Nathan. And if you want to become more self-aware, builtforthetrades.com, go to our free resources tab. There's a leadership assessment in there.
Yes.
Click in there. It's free. Take it. That'll give you your Enneagram assessment. That'll really help you become more self-aware. And we're always here for you.
Yep.
You can reach out to us anywhere from our website, our email, also down to our social media links. So we hope you have an amazing day. And